an AppleVis original.
Hello there, and welcome to AppleVis Extra number 98. My name is Dave Nason. Because it is June, we are talking, of course, about WWDC. And because it is AppleVis, I am talking, of course, to Thomas Donville. How are you today, Tom?
Hey, I'm pretty good. Boy, was that a show or what?
It was nearly 2 hours that went on. And yeah, it was probably the most anticipated WWDC I can remember in a long time. Like, everybody was waiting for this one, waiting for the announcements. So before we get into the nitty gritty, did it meet those expectations for you?
Definitely. I had a checkbox of all the things I wanted to hear, and it definitely checked all the tick box that I wanted to see and hear. So I was very happy with the results, and I know there were some disappointments out there as well, but that's what we'll be talking about.
Yeah, for sure. And it's funny, we've had a few of these announcements in recent months from all the companies. You know, Google had I.O., Microsoft have had events, OpenAI had an event, and they've all, you know, Google especially and so on, they've shoehorned the words AI or the letters AI into every sentence of the entire thing, it seemed. Whereas Apple, it was kind of, it must have been nearly an hour before they said the term. So I thought that was interesting. So we might take the same approach to them, and we will kick off with the regular updates, you might call them, to iOS and VisionOS and macOS and so on. And then we can have a chat through the so-called AI. How does that sound?
Sounds great. I think that'd be perfect.
Well, they did kick off with VisionOS, and I don't think we need to.
Why not, man? You know, it is kind of odd that, you know, it's only been 4 months since they released it, and they actually have a VisionOS 2 that comes out. I'm thinking, wow, this is kind of, not only that, but it really didn't feel like it was a 2. I mean, it was like one big thing, and that was it. I was kind of really disappointed. I mean, yeah, granted that 3D photos sounds cool and all, but definitely not for anything for us.
No. And later heard, you know, Marcus Brownlee, you know, he said it's more, felt like more of a 1.2 than a 2.
Exactly. It was like a 1.2. It was like a 1.5 update. That was it.
But I guess what they're doing there is they're getting it onto their summer cycle. That's all that it really is. And next year it'll be 3 and, you know, go from there, I guess. So makes sense. But what it included was, yeah, you can turn any photo into a 3D experience or whatever the correct terminology is. Mm-hmm. And some new gestures. But from an accessibility point of view, we're not aware of anything really yet. You know, it's still a product that is very limited in terms of availability and, you know, what it can do. It's just a very young product. It's coming to 8 more countries. So I think it's Japan, China, Singapore, Australia, Canada, France, Germany, and the UK will be getting it soon. So,
woohoo, you get it.
Yeah. So, if you have an Apple store, if you're in any of those countries, go check it out. You haven't gone down to a store even and checked it out, have you?
Oh, having not even attempted. Not until they open up the camera and the microphone. That is when I will look at it.
Yeah, I'm exactly like you. It's when you can do be my eyes and so on. But even then, I think this possibly isn't the product for that. I think it's a pair of glasses or something that is the product that we need more than this. So yeah, we'll see. I think the big one every year for us is iOS, obviously. So with the software running on our iPhones, and there was a few kind of cool things. I think the biggest one possibly was, and if there are any Android people listening, yes, you were going to say we've had this forever but it's new for iOS, is that you no longer are locked. You are locked into a grid still, obviously, but you're not locked into everything starting in the top left and just filling the screen from the top left down. You can now place any icon anywhere on the screen, and you can have big open gaps if you want to. If you only have a few apps on a screen, you can just have them lined up at the bottom of the screen and just have empty space above it rather than the other way around. Is that something you find will be useful?
Yeah, you know, what's cool about the home screen, though, Dave, is that I think this is going to be useful for those that are low vision. Maybe not so much for the blind. Maybe there's some purposes, but low vision, definitely, because, you know, they introduced the dark mode and being able to tint the colors of different things for your app colors on your icons on your home screen, which I thought was great. Knowing that, but you can actually enlarge the icon, so you can have fewer apps, and so it makes it bigger so you can see it. You know, I don't think it's going to play so much for us, because I figure unless you're a touch explorer kind of a person, but I think low vision is definitely going to take advantage of that for sure.
I think the large icons could appeal. Just having fewer apps in the space might help some people. And I'd, like I say as well, what I was talking about a minute ago, the fact that you can have empty spaces on the screen, you know, both. Because I, for example, have, and I use focus modes and things, and I have one screen that has my work apps on it, which, you know, I hide at the weekend or whatever. And it only has, I think, 12 apps on the screen. And before they had to be up the top of the screen, but now I can have them all down the bottom half of the screen. So exactly. The empty space is kind of there at the top instead of the bottom. So they're easier to reach. You know what I mean? It's a small thing, a life-changing thing by any stretch, but it's kind of convenient.
Definitely. I mean, you get to rearrange it a little bit better towards the bottom if that's all you want. And the adjustable widget sounds interesting. Not that I don't think it'll make any difference to us either, but I really am glad that they decided to take the password and make it standalone. That makes it more compelling because, you know, it's always been a pain in the butt to go under settings, go under password. Now it's up in front and center, so it seems like this is like a real deal. It's like a whole brand new thing that we can access. And now in that, but they have also categorized it too.
Yeah, I believe there was memes already going around of one password executives crying. But
right. Now, if you haven't looked at it, did you look at it? It's pretty cool. They got it all categorized too. So it used to be like one big clump of all the things. Now they got it separated by Wi-Fi, and they got pass keys, they got verification, two fobs, and things like that. So I really like how they categorize it differently. It makes it a lot easier to go through, and it seems like it's more manageable.
I really like the password, sorry, the Wi-Fi piece, because I went in there and I found, oh, there's a Wi-Fi that is still on my device from a holiday home we stayed in a few months ago. Do you know? And it's like, oh, delete. You know, I don't need that anymore. You know, things like that. So desk categorization is really nice.
Right. I thought that was pretty cool. And, you know, we got to give a shout out to the messages. Rich text effects. You know, that's kind of, I think we can all take advantage of that. There's sometimes we like to bold things and underline and things like that. So I'm glad that they went through the rich text implementation. The only downfall of that, I was really surprised that the RCS isn't out yet. It's like they're kind of dragging their feet and not going to be out until this fall, which was interesting.
It's interesting they mentioned it. It was very low-key. They didn't make a big thing of it, but it is actually quite a big deal. If you've got Android people in your life, which most people presumably do, it's definitely useful. Like, it's going to make a big difference. And I've always wondered, I've always found it interesting. I know there's been talk about they want to lock people into iMessage, but the reality is actually the lack of RCS has locked people like me out of messages. I use WhatsApp because it's cross-platform, and I've just never used messages. So potentially they're opening more people to actually start using the app as well. So it's, yeah, I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, and you know, it's going to be great when RCS does come out, and that way we'll all be not equal footing, but a better footing. But, it, you know, you can tell that they purposely are trying to keep iMessage on top of RCS and trying to make it better, but it's just a shame. But anywho, that's fine. A couple other things, just some notable things I played around and that they kind of briefly mentioned is the now being able to do call recording. And I was like, oh, wow, I can actually record my phone calls, which is kind of important because there's times I need to do that. And then to have it transcribed to you. So I thought that was long overdue because there's been so many years. A lot of people wanted to do recording of the phone calls. And so to me, I thought that was kind of a under the radar, kind of a big thing that I liked about that.
Yeah, definitely. I wonder, will that be international, actually? Remember, probably this time last year, we spoke about the transcription of voicemails, and I was saying we don't have it over here, and I'm not sure about other countries, but yeah, so it'll be interesting to see. Well, there's...
Well, then that's a shame. My gosh, it's been a year, and oh, wow. right? It's just crazy. The other thing I really like, this app privacy, so I can make it, well, most of the apps that you have, and if it doesn't have the biometric to gain access to, I can lock it down. So I thought this is absolutely fantastic. So, if you're one of those people that, tend to lend your phone out to people just to be able to use. You can actually lock down certain apps to, and it doesn't matter if it's a stock app or third party. So I was very happy to see that too. I thought that was a very welcome thing.
Yes, brilliant. So that they'll need Face ID or Touch ID to open whatever app you designate. It's, yeah, pretty cool. And you can also hide apps as well. So if there's certain apps that somebody for any reason doesn't want other people to see on their device, they can, they can hide that as well.
I had to think about that. I was like, what's the purpose of that? I mean, I understand you like you want to hide things. I don't know. It's just I heard
the joke. You don't want your wife to see Tinder on your phone.
That's exactly. You know, it's like what purpose would you do that? I would be curious what you know, good reason you would do that. But you know, I don't know enough about this yet, but I think a lot of people may love the new map topography, whatever you want to call it. Mm. So what I understand is it allows you to customize map routes, and you can place notes and comments along the route, and you can create these routes. Now, I don't know enough about it. This is what they discuss, and this almost sounds like little drops that you just go from here to there, like almost like Voice Vista. Or you can create your own route, and you can make little drops here and there, but this is all built into the Apple Map. Now, I'm curious if that is exactly what I think it is, and if it is, wow, what a huge, big thing that's going to be.
Yeah, that's really cool. And you can, theoretically, is it, you can get turn-by-turn spoken navigation and between this route that you've saved.
Yeah, so it's not like based on streets or anything. So they were taking an example of hiking in national parks. I'm thinking, well, why not? Can I do that in the neighborhood? Like, you just got to turn right here, and it may not be a street. It could be a path or something. So I have to, we don't know exactly how well this might work for us, but the potential is there. My gosh, they really cleaned up the settings. I know that wasn't really mentioned a whole lot. Now the settings gotten kind of cleaned up. It's much more organized, and there isn't a whole lot in the settings. You now have something called, we call an app button at the very bottom. So if you double tap that, and then your list of app comes up. And what I love about it, they actually categorize it by letters. So you can use headings to go A, B, C instead of just swipe. And so that was huge. I was like, oh my gosh, this is great.
Yeah, it's funny. But then you open some things and you go, where's that gone? You open Control Center and there's like nothing in there because they've got a new Control Center entirely now. They've overhauled Control Center.
Mm.
You can now have multiple pages and you can move things around and have different sections.
I don't know how you
control it all from inside the control.
It almost sounds too convoluted. It's almost like it's too messy. It's like, yeah, I got more control of the control panel and I'm able to expand it and categorize it, but it seems like it can be a big mess.
Yeah. I don't know. I think a little bit like home screens and widgets and all that kind of stuff. I think you can choose how much you want to put into it. You can use the default and ignore all of that stuff, or you can choose to, you know, go in, edit it and add stuff. And I think third-party developers, again, will be able to create little actions for the control center, which I think could be really useful. So
mm-hmm.
I'm optimistic.
Good for you, man. I'm glad one of us is optimistic, right? Hey, you know what one of my favorite things is that on the lock screen, you know, that little flashlight button and the camera button, you can now replace that with something else. I mean, how many times have we opened up our lock screen and actually hit the flashlight? That can now be replaced with a different app. I was like, oh, wow, that is so awesome.
It's sad that one of my favorite features of iOS 18 is that I don't have to have
right?
touch on my lock screen anymore.
Yeah. There, you know, there's just so many things that they didn't talk about, but just it might have been up on the PowerPoint we didn't see and all, but another one I saw that I thought was really cool is, you know, it kind of a pain in the butt to add cars to your Apple Pay. And it looks like now you are able to open up your Apple Pay and you say add card and you just tap your credit card or your debit card to the back of the phone. So it reads the RFID off that card and it'll be automatically inserted. And I thought, wow. Of course, don't forget the T9 dialer that everybody seems to be talking about. And for those that don't know what the T9 dialer is, that now when you go to the phone app and you go to the keys, what do you call it? The keypad where you enter your phone number if you just type in the first few letters using the alphanumeric T9s, like T-H-O for Thomas, and it'll bring up Thomas, and you just double tap that and call. So no more having to go through the contact and find the person you want. I thought that was kind of cool. Gosh, let's talk about some voiceover stuff, shall we? Let's talk about some accessibility.
Let him out, Thomas.
Oh, you did?
Absolutely. I mean, and this is some stuff we didn't, you know, wasn't in the keynote. It'll probably be in some sessions during WWDC this week. But we downloaded the betas and found some really interesting stuff, including a what's new in voiceover section that you can actually go in and be told what's new and not have to be looking for everything.
Right? That's been long overdue. Now it has a very full, comprehensive list of all the voiceover new things you can find in iOS 18 right there. So it's beautiful.
And a tutorial.
Yes. You know, I got to play with that tutorial. That is really set up nicely. It's pretty comprehensive and it's very easy to do and easy to use. It has a full-blown tutorial for people that want to learn how to use voiceover. This is fantastic. So move over, assistive technologist trainers out there, because here comes tutorial.
Yeah, no, it is great. I mean, the Mac voiceovers had it forever. I mean, I got my first Mac in 2010, and it had a tutorial on it. Android, again, TalkBack has a tutorial and onboarding one. So, you know, it's one of those, it's overdue, but welcome, I guess.
Yeah, definitely overdue, way overdue. This is something they should have had from day one for people to learn rather than just trying to figure out using the practice. What do you think of the live recognition coming to the rotor now?
Yeah, it's very cool. I think it's still a little buggy at the moment, but it is a beta. That's not a complaint. I understand.
Well, the point is that you now can initiate live recognition right there on the rotor, which is kind of cool.
You don't need to do this. What was it? A four-finger triple tap or something? I could never.
Oh, it is a four-finger quadruple tap. I was like, there's no way I could do that. So now this makes it much easier.
Just go to the rotor and you just switch and it has scene or people or door or whatever. And you just, then when you get to it, you double tap, switches it on. And then you go, it has text. So a little bit like the Seeing AI short text feature, I believe is the text recognition channel now in the Magnifier app.
Mm-hmm. I tell you what's going to be, I think is underrated and I think it's going to be a lot bigger deal than a lot of people will give credit to, but they now allow you to have much more customization to audio ducking. So it's not just simply on and off. Now you can tweak if you want that audio ducking to be a little bit more concise together, or if you want the voiceover to be louder, and so you got more controls. I think that's going to be a big success.
Yeah, I definitely think that's good.
What else did I notice? Did you notice the anytime you turn voiceover on, that it gives you a very unique haptic feeling. So you know that voiceover has been turned on. And this is going to be very useful for us to know that it actually came on when I triple click it. Sometimes it'll say voiceover is on, but it's just nice to have a secondary notification that it came up. So it's kind of a nice little feeling to it. And I guess for those that are deaf that don't hear it, now we'll be able to feel it too.
Exactly. Yeah. And you can, I believe you can switch that off if you don't like it.
You can turn it off.
Yeah. It is. It's definitely, I noticed it immediately, really. And then the other interesting thing is languages is gone from the rotor and it's been replaced with something called voices, which the idea behind it is it gives you a bit more control. So you're not simply adding, say, US English and UK English to your rotor and then picking a voice within that. You can have two or three or four US English voices if you want, all in your rotor. And you switch, and instead of switching between the language, you're switching voice. So it'll say Alex, Samantha, whatever, you know, as you switch through them. So
definitely, I really like how they consolidate that together. I think that was a good step on their part.
Yeah, I think it'll be definitely useful.
And now, one of the last ones here, that I think one of the biggest one that I think a lot of people are going to be talking about is the Braille screen input. So if you're a BSI user, you're really going to love this new setup. Now, I don't know a whole lot about BSI because I'm not a Braille user myself. However, it seems like now there's a gesture that you implement. You put your fingers on outside of the corners of the device, double tap with both fingers, and initiates the BSI automatically. So no longer have to go to the rotor to initiate it. And there seems to be some levels of things you can pick from. I think there's like a command level where you can actually initiate different things, like going to the dock or
location. Essentially, you can use ESI in the same way you would use an external Braille display to actually control the device.
Yeah.
You can use Braille cords to kind of move.
That's amazing.
Items and that kind of thing. So essentially replacing your swiping gestures with Braille gestures to actually control the device, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, I think it's going to be huge, but it was pretty much a lot of stuff for iOS, whether they mentioned that or not. So, I mean, that's the beautiful part about being able to have a couple of days to digest is that we're able to include a lot of things that they didn't mention that's going to be something that you can look forward to.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And then, well, I suppose iPadOS is effectively getting everything iOS got, plus a calculator, Thomas. Are you excited?
You know, Dave, that was probably the funniest part of the whole thing was that I thought Apple did a good job in making fun of themselves when they said, but wait, the calculator comes to iPad, and then you can hear this little cheering, which, yay! And it was really cute how they did that. But I tell you what, I have to admit, they did a great job. I mean, I was thinking, all right, just a calculator. Why are we getting excited? But I tell you, that calculator, holy smokes. Wow, is that on steroids and enhanced? So they did a great job of doing that, if you like to describe what that does now.
Yeah, they introduced something called Math Notes, is what I believe they called it. They connected it a lot to the Pencil, but I don't think it necessarily is just to do with the Pencil. And like, it'll work out equations for you and all that kind of stuff. So they certainly did a big, you know, if they're going to do the calculator, they wanted to go big with the calculator, I guess.
Right. I mean, they really went beyond. And I wish this was around when I was in school. My gosh. I mean, this is, you don't have to have Apple Pencils. Like you said, you can use your finger and you can even input it by just typing it in. And we're talking about equations, folks. We're not just talking about 1 + 2. We're talking about like algebraic stuff, even trig. One of my favorite is that they got variables. So if you have you can have this designed to a graph, and then from that graph, I can have a variable that variates. And so I can see from 0 to 10, for example, and it'll automatically input that and it puts in, I was like, oh my gosh, not that's going to be totally great for those blind, but the point is that you can actually put in algebraic stuff. So if you will put X plus 50 equals 100, or equals Y, or I don't know, you know what I'm talking about. You'd be able to put that in there and it'll actually calculate it for you for the equation for X or whatever. And so I thought so what they did, they went one step above and beyond to make a calculator more powerful. And it's not just for iPad, like you said, it just so happened to be the iPad, but it's coming to the Mac and iOS as well.
Yeah. Was there anything else on iPad?
Not really. Nothing that really shined out to me besides that.
Yeah. So then we can talk about the watch, where I think we were chatting a bit before, and more every year, the watch focuses on health and fitness. That's its core kind of purpose, I guess, of the product. And there was more improvements to health and fitness this year. There's a training mode and there's a new Vitals app as well, which is, I guess, again, we already had the fitness app and you go into heart rate and things like that, but this seems to be going further again to kind of give you data about your, what it sees as your health based on the sensors and based on your training that you're doing.
I'm really excited about the Vital apps. I think they definitely have pushed the edge. I you know, some people said this wasn't a whole big thing for once. I don't know. I think this training load and the Vital apps, I thought they were huge. I mean, those are something, those two I would use. There's been so many different update sites. It's like, I'll never use that. But those two I actually would use. You know, the bad news out of all this is that you and I are out of the watch business now, because it seems like they have gotten rid of Apple Watch 4th and 5th series along with the original SC. So those watch will be dropped from the OS 11. So that's the disappointing part. It's great to see the live activities coming to your smart stack, which is kind of cool because I do use live activities. So I don't know. I was really happy to see those updates for the watch itself. I thought they were big for myself. I it was something I would use.
Yeah, the training mode will be interesting as well. The training mode sort of seems to look at your, if you use workouts a lot, it's supposed to kind of track how you're doing and be able to tell you, okay, you're overdoing it a bit today, or you're, you know, you can do better, you know what I mean? And kind of look against long-term data and all that kind of stuff. So it'll be interesting to see again how good it is at that and how useful people find it in practice, but it sounds good in theory anyway. Yeah, live activities is definitely useful. Mm-hmm. It's a useful feature on the phone. So having it available on your watch is definitely.
Exactly.
And then they had a section, did they call it audio and home or something to that effect? But essentially HomePod and tvOS, yes, was what they're talking about. Did anything jump out to you there? I mean, there was stuff like the audio boost for spoken content. So you're watching a movie, we've all been there.
Yes.
Show or a movie and you can't hear what they're mumbling.
I thought that was amazing. Yeah, it's called enhanced dialogues. So essentially what that does, they had a kind of a version of it before, but this is more improved. So this allows you to be able to watch your shows or TVs or movies and be able to pull out the dialogue. So the spoken part of the movie. So if there's a bunch of effects going on, a bunch of loud things in the background, it'll actually quiet that section down so you can be able to hear them talk. So I think this is, maybe it wasn't ideally originated for those with accessibility, but it's definitely going to be for people like myself that have hearing losses, have a hard time hearing TV with so many effects. So I really like that. But you know, the one thing I was thinking about you, though, is the insight.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So now you, I believe you swipe down, and if you're watching a TV show or a movie, it'll give you information about actors or, you know, all that kind of stuff, information about who's in that scene, that kind of thing. A little bit, probably, about what Amazon do, I guess. And then also, if there's a song playing, I believe it'll actually give you the track.
Yeah, and you could be able to add it to your playlist and whatnot. It's really interesting how you're able to pull all that information. I mean, they kind of stole a lot of that from Google X-Ray, but it is what it is. But it's great to have that. So I was happy to see that they introduced that to TV. I mean, even though it's kind of minimal what they introduced, but at least like, it was two big thing that came along. So I was happy with that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it is good. It is good to see those improvements still coming down the line. And Mac OS, I suppose, again, we'll be coming back to those letters AI later, but where a lot of stuff is shared across the platforms. But on Mac OS, one thing that is new and I think will be very interesting to people and will be definitely keen to know how VoiceOver is going to play with it, but iPhone mirroring. Did you see yourself using this at all?
Wow.
Describe what it is even.
You know, if the number one thing that everybody wants to know, and I'm with you all, is that going to be accessible? I mean, the mirroring thought of it is amazing. I mean, being able to see the screen and be able to hear the audio from the phone. So technically, you can hear the VoiceOver coming across it. So I don't know if that will be the case. But the bigger question is, will it be able to allow you to use your keyboard instead of your mouse? And if so, I wonder if you'd be able to initiate the different keys to activate the things on your iPhone. If that does work as it's supposed to, wow, that's going to be huge. It's going to be huge. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, because they had Sidecar, and that wasn't, it's still not a accessible. So I'm hoping that this will be the case for Sequoia, that this is the one. What I really like about this most is the iPhone notification. That's more than mirroring. I thought, so any notification that you get on your iPhone will now come to your Mac. I was like, now that is ideal. That's cool.
Yeah, that's the great thing that I suppose the advantage that Apple have, where if they have somebody locked into all of their platforms, they just play so nicely together. Like, it'll be interesting.
Right. But the good news
is, it using the iPhones? It's using mirroring. Is it using the iPhones VoiceOver? Is it using the Macs VoiceOver? I also had played a little game with somebody yesterday of, could you, because there's already a feature to mirror your Apple Watch to your iPhone. So could you mirror your Apple Watch to your iPhone and then mirror your iPhone to your Mac and then mirror your Mac to your Vision Pro and control your Apple Watch from your Vision Pro? There you go.
There you go. There you go. That would be, I was going to say the best part about this, my understanding, this Sequoia works on most of the Macs already. The only ones that I saw that wasn't qualify is the older MacBook Air. So if you have a 2018 and older, so you have to have a MacBook Air 2020 to be able to use Sequoia. But other than that, it still uses the last year MacBook Pro 2018 is the low end of being able. So it looks like Sequoia will be able to be used for your laptop. So I was, that was another great sign too.
I'd imagine some features will be locked only to M1 and above, you know, Apple Silicon Mac.
Actually,
I'd be surprised if iPhone mirroring, for example, works on my Intel.
Okay.
We'll see. We'll see. And actually, in the realm of sharing, I think it was part of the iPad section, but they were, it wasn't clear to me anyway, and I don't think it's been clarified yet, is if this will also work on iPhone. But SharePlay will now allow not just screen sharing, but actually screen taking over control of a screen. So you could share your iPhone screen to me and I could control your iPhone. Which for tech support people and so on, that could be incredibly useful. And for us, maybe if we need to get out of a jam and we need help with something on our phones from a family member or something like that, that we could potentially FaceTime them and share play and they could control our screen.
I agree. I think if you get yourself in a pickle and you have a friend that can answer you, take over, that is ideal. I'd love that. It would be cool if it was accessible for us to do that, but I'm going to have a funny feeling it's not.
We'll see, yeah. Hopefully. We can live in hope. Yeah, was there anything else before we dive into the other anticipated piece of news?
No. I think that the first half of the keynote was pretty much what we covered here, and now for the big gorilla in the room.
Were you aware that AI in fact stands for Apple?
Was that clever on their marketing part or what? I was like, oh, that was totally brilliant on their part.
Yeah, just fair play to them. But I say fair play to them, it'll also be very confusing.
Right. You know, I think they did a good job on that naming because I was reading somewhere where they were purposely doing the Apple Intelligence on purpose because that way they can just kind of do a broad stroke that all these things are based on Apple Intelligence, even though they may not be entirely AI specific like we know. So, you know, it's not always tied to AI because it's using Apple Intelligence.
Yeah, exactly. And I suppose there's three layers to it in terms of how it's working. Like there's a lot of, they told us a lot of on-device as well as functions. A lot of things are just, you know, done on device with the very powerful chips in the latest iPhones. And then some things will go to what they call the secure cloud. Is that what they called it? Private cloud. You know, Apple servers that will be anonymized and all that kind of stuff. But then also Siri will know when it's something that it can't actually do as well as, say, ChatGPT 4.0 or 4.0, and it will actually ask your permission to go and send the query off to ChatGPT instead. So it's kind of got these three different layers.
There was a lot of thoughts that went into this. You can really tell that Apple was wanting to make this right instead of just pushing something out and having so many different hallucinations and different problems. And not that it's not going to still happen. It will happen in some circumstance. But the point is the privacy was a big thing. As we all know, AI is going through a lot of headaches and heartaches because of the privacy issue. And Apple went way above and beyond what they want to do for privacy. And so it was beautiful that the layer one is all on your device itself, so none of that ever goes to Apple, to anybody else. And if they have to do something more complex, like you said, layer two goes to its cloud of itself, but that's still anonymized. And so meaning that they have no idea what you are doing. It's encrypted and it's just using for the computing power. But the layer three, which is really what kind of put kind of a tick in my checkbox, is I wanted Siri to be more intelligent, not just on device, but be able to be like a GPT-like. And so it's so great to see that they made a deal with ChatGPT and possibly Google Genesis. That's what it sounds like. They're willing to open things up and not allow you to choose. But I think that information still is anonymized as well as is being sent to ChatGPT. So the content itself is still going to be out there in the server. So you don't want to send anything out there that anything personal on there, but at least it's anonymized. But my gosh, Siri, this, I'm telling you, this Apple Intelligent is just everything I wanted. And there was certain things I wanted. First of all, is Siri. Be able to understand me and talk to me the way I normally do and be able to perform things on the device. And on top of that, going to chat to you, GPT, that was a big thing for me.
Yeah, and not give us those, I don't know if end this on the web, responses anymore. And actually, yeah, understand. Even the way it was able to, a bit more human interaction, you know, in terms of human-like interaction, in terms of, you know, you can, if you make a mistake halfway through the sentence, you can kind of fix it or follow up, actually doing follow-up questions.
Right.
So if it does that as well as they promised, that'll be great.
The thing I want to know, Dave, and to you too, is that I was kind of, in a way, surprised that Apple didn't have their own solution against ChatGPT or Google Genesis, and they end up having to do a third party to incorporate them. And I don't know if that's going to be a permanent thing or if they just decided they were just so far behind, they might as well just have somebody come in. There's a lot of questions about, will Apple keep progressing towards their own and just kind of slowly but surely kind of squeeze them out? Don't know.
It's hard to know because it's been talked for years about, with, you know, Siri, it is what age now? It came out in 2011, so 13 years old now. And it was incredible, you know, when it came out, but then it got quickly overtaken by others. And there was a lot of talk for years that Apple's approach doesn't help, you know what I mean, that in terms of data collection and so on. So can they keep up? Is the question, right, if we're going this way. But then there's also too much, you know, there's a little bit overhype sometimes around the words AI, and you know what we actually want is the functionality. We don't actually
Right.
You know what I mean? About some of the stuff that's updated. So
I am impressed with the onboard, and the biggest thing there's one thing that really stood out to me is that you can ask Siri to help you find, or hey, where do I go to turn off this or that within settings, and it will actually prompt you and tell you step by step how to do something. So I said, oh my gosh, so you can actually ask her, if you forgot, where did I make this switch? And you don't have to be exact. You could be kind of just like somewhere in the ballpark, and she'll try to figure that out. So the how-to section is going to be huge. So I can actually ask her a question and how to find something on the settings to help you change things.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I wonder, will it be able to do other, it'll just be Apple stuff, or will it be able to do?
My understanding is just Apple things. So so it's almost like they have a chatbot that's just for Apple stuff. So you can ask any specific question to Apple. So they got their own ChatGPT, but it's just for Apple related stuff. And that's my feeling what they've done here with that. So the other thing that kind of checked my box was the writing tools. Yes, my friends, I know a lot of you probably like hate it, but you know I love the writing tools. So that's built in. So meaning that if you want to have AI look over what you have written, you can ask for it to correct some grammar and spelling checking and variations. So you can say, make this in a friendly tone or a professional tone, as you know. And so it's built right into it. And it's not just for Apple stock. So if you're in Messages or in your WhatsApp, any app for that matter, you can still have that corrected. So I was like, oh, right, that makes the second tick, tick, my little box check.
Yeah, I did wonder about that, if they'd have that. Because it's, you can have it change this, just create something for you, or you can have it, like proofread or change styles for you, or, whatever you kind of want. So
That's to be seen. Image Playground, let's talk about that. You know, at first I thought, oh my gosh, I create images myself, and this is a lot of fun. But, you know, once again, Apple was smart in doing this, because what a lot of places are getting in trouble to is that they're stealing other people's work. Maybe they're stealing part of this picture, this car, this, and it's all copywriting. So that's where they get in trouble. So what Apple did with the image creation playground is that you can create images, but they're going to be cartoonish kind of looking things. So that way they're not stealing anything, which is kind of cool. So, but still, I would say I'm curious. I know you can choose from animations, illustration, and sketch. And those are the type of images that you can have it create. But I wonder if I would say, hey, put me next to Mickey Mouse, I wonder if that Mickey Mouse would be drawn out as Mickey Mouse. Because that's where they get in trouble. So I am curious how that's going to work. I doubt that we'll be able to do copyrighted things, but it will be interesting. But nonetheless, what a fun little deal that you can make with the messages based on somebody's response. You can create an image based on their response. And so you can make them little memes or stuff.
I'd be interested to see again with how that kind of thing plays a voiceover, not just the creation, but actually if you share it, you know, will it be alt? Do you have to write alt text, or will it give you alt text? Or, you know,
right? That would be interesting.
Genmoji. I know if you're a big emoji user. I'm a big emoji user. So I was like, and only the other day, I honestly was texting someone and I wanted to do a laughing, kind of an evil laugh, and I couldn't find an evil laugh emoji. And I was like, yeah, Genmoji would be perfect here because I could ask it to create one for me.
Oh my gosh, Genmoji, is that, so essentially what this does is, folks, is that you now are able to describe or tell the AI you prompted to what Genmoji you want to create. So it creates emoji based on that, and then you can share that. So it's your own emoji. So this is absolutely cool. So this is where the downfall of all languages is going to go down, because now I predicted that we'll have this hieroglyphic kind of language. So now we are. So we can now have all these Genmos if there isn't a word for it. So what a big deal that is.
Yes, absolutely. I think, I suppose, the other thing the Siri theoretically will be able to, and actually we should say that a lot of this stuff is not, yeah, it's not, none of it seems to be in the beta now, but
no.
A lot of it is stuff that they're announcing now that may not even come till like into next year. It's not necessarily going to be there even in September. Some of this stuff, I think they kind of have to announce it partly probably for market reasons, I suspect, because there's so much.
What a bummer.
One important thing is that Siri, they say, will theoretically be able to really take on full actions for you, so you can, it'll be able to read your screen really, and you could say do this and it will just carry out an action, or go to this app, you know, so open be my eyes and take a picture, you know what I mean, or whatever the guide might be. I don't know if there's better examples than that, but that it will be able to actually, yeah, carry out full strings of actions potentially for you.
I think it's going to be very useful. I see a lot of situations where messages say, hey, how about we get together on this date? And I can just say, hey, create a appointment based on this message, and it'll create it for you, and I'll put it in the calendar and everything for you. So there's a lot of potential in here that is going to be remarkable. Like you said, in beta 1, the Apple Intelligence is not available, and we don't know when that'll be available. And when it does become available, apparently there's a waiting list. So we got a long way to go through this, and like Dave says, we may not even see it for the fall, but it's one of those, it's going to be in, it's in progress. It's a work in progress that hopefully they get the building by time that we hit the next year. I am anxious to see what the iPhone 16 that's coming up this fall will entice in terms of, will have any exclusivity stuff for Apple Intelligence. So there's lots to, questions and thoughts that we will have to wait and see.
Yeah, because it seems even, I think you and I are both iPhone 15 Pro owners. I don't know about you, but I wouldn't be intending on buying a new phone again this year. And there's a lot of people on 14s and 13s and 12s with perfectly good phones that aren't going to get some of these AI features. They'll get all the other iOS 18 stuff, but the AI stuff.
You know, this is another Apple marketing ploy. This is excellent marketing on Apple's portion, is to say this is only going to be available for the iPhone 15 Pro and above. Boy, you talk about super cycle, and I think that for those that have older devices, you know, this is actually going to be that 1 year that this will be going to entice you to really consider upgrading that device. And that's a point that they're making. And I think as a business, I think that's great. As a consumer, I think it really stinks. But if it does most everything I need with my iPhone 15 Pro, I will be happy to stick with it.
You say that every year, Tom.
I do. I do say that every year. It better be that one thing. But if it has everything that I need, well, I don't know. But we'll see. Yeah. This
I'm hoping the 15 Pro at least will be able to do everything.
Right.
Yeah, it's definitely got a lot of potential. And it's interesting they're still taking a different approach to some other companies on this stuff. But I think, again, they're doing that Apple thing. They're focused on this, what it will actually do in practice, I guess, is what they're trying to focus on.
Mm-hmm. You know, after doing wrapping this all up and thinking about the keynote itself, for those that we discuss on the first half, you know, all devices, most devices will be able to provide all the things that we mentioned, except for the Apple Intelligence, of course. You know, there's some people saying this is very minor things, and I'm thinking, well, maybe there were only a few things, but I thought, in general, I thought they introduced some really big features that I think that will make a difference to a lot of people. So the enhanced mail and the new messages, the password and the customization of the lock screen and the home screen. There's a lot there, and I was pretty happy. I thought, I've been disappointed for the past 2 or 3 years of the WWDC. I didn't think there was a whole lot to offer that came out of it that I thought was really happy about it. But I really thought I would give it, I would say a B for the older devices. But when it comes to Apple Intelligent, it was definitely an A+. So this is no doubt the biggest iOS update I have seen ever since I've been beta testing. This is hands down the biggest since probably the Siri came out.
Yeah, I think it is definitely one of the biggest. I mean, it's a nearly 2-decade-old operating system. It's a mature product now. So getting, you know, massive features every year is, you know, difficult. And I think as it goes, I think this is definitely one of the biggest updates we've had in a long time.
Mm-hmm. Now, some people were asking, are there any new voices? And this, you know, I get that a lot. Not really. There's some new languages, Lithuanian and some other language that came about, which is great. Somebody talked about Nikki Compact. I don't know if that's truly new or not, but nothing like earth-shattering, nothing new. I was hoping that was one checkbox that wasn't checked, that they introduced some AI voices. Not to say that isn't coming, because we haven't seen any Apple Intelligence and any of that stuff come through yet. That might still be in the cars. It just wasn't mentioned, but we'll have to wait and see.
I think the other thing that maybe people will be asking about and we don't know yet is around kind of image recognition. So we still just have the basic image recognition. When you tap on a photo, it'll give you that kind of basic description. But if you want the full AI kind of description, you still have to hit share and go down and find describe with me my eyes or envision it or whichever app you're choosing to use seeing AI for those AI descriptions. And it'll be really interesting to see, do they include an Apple version of that that's much just there and much easier to access? And B, could they make even those third party ones easier to actually access without having to go through 4 layers of share sheets or something?
Right. It's one of those I'm waiting to see once we get the Apple Intelligence, because that's the first thing I'll do. I'll go to photo, open it up, and I'll just have Siri describe it to me and see if it does.
Yeah. I think that'll be interesting. But
mm-hmm.
That pretty much covers it. Thomas, is there anything else you wanted to cover?
Nope. I think we pretty much digest everything, and we just kind of gave the meat of everything, and without the mumbling and dumbling that I typically do.
Thank you very much. And of course, if you want to know more about iOS 18 and Apple Intelligence and all Mac, Sequoia, and all the different stuff that's out, do check out applebase.com. There's Alex has written his usual thread on what happened again in the event. So if you want that summary again, it's there. And there's lots of threads discussing how iOS 18 is looking so far. So do check that out. Thomas, I'm sure everyone can look forward to another series of Thomas podcasts come the end of the summer as well, demonstrating some of this new stuff.
Definitely. And come back in September. I'll have a whole slew of all the things I've just covered, plus more. And so stay tuned. And definitely come back to AppleViz to see what is going to be available when it does come out.
Cool. Well, I will leave it there so and say thank you, Thomas, for joining me. And thanks, everyone, for listening.
Bye-bye.
This AppleViz podcast has been brought to you by the community of AppleViz.com for the latest in resources and tips and tricks to get you the best experience from your Apple device. Visit www.appleviz.com.